Okay, we're beginning here on the top of Mem Daled Amud Aleph, 15 lines down. Just a quick chazara of what we left off with, which is the discussion about the Torbetz HaVeshet, which is the upper end of the esophagus. What is the standing, what is the status of that top part of the esophagus? We saw a machlokin between Rav and Shmuel. Rav says that it is pasul b'mashu, whereas Shmuel said that it's pasul b'rubo. The way that it was expressed in the beginning of the Gemara was that their machloket is really not just about how much makes it pasul, but rather about what's the status of the Torbetz HaVeshet. And Rav, who believes the Torbetz HaVeshet, that upper piece of the Veshet, is equivalent to the Veshet, it's equivalent to the esophagus, is a good makom shechita, so therefore it has the same disqualifying issues, which includes that if you have a nekiv in the esophagus, that's going to be true of the Torbetz HaVeshet, and that's why a mashu is problematic by the Torbetz HaVeshet. Shmuel, on the other hand, who said rubo, was saying that it's not a part of the Veshet, it's not a good makom shechita, and therefore it needs a rubo to be pasul, because it's not like a Veshet, it's not a makom shechita. Then we saw Rava's psak with regards to that, where he seemed to combine the chumrei of Rav, the chumrei of Shmuel, and because of that, they said he had to pay for the psak aloha that he gave because it was incorrect. And then the Gemara works through the problems with taking up the chumrot of two sides of a machloket when they're mutually exclusive. And then the Gemara discussed Beit Hillel and Beit Shammai, the machloket, Beit Hillel and Beit Shammai, just discussed much more in detail in the Gemara in Eruvin as to why we come to the conclusion that we paskin like Beit Hillel. And then based on that, we said that Rava's issue was that he was taking up the chumrot of two sides. But then we, in the end, say, Kasha, what was Rava thinking? Rava's a big Talmud Chacham. Rava knows all this information. So then what was he thinking? In the end, we said that Rami Bar Yecheskel comes and says that the Mesorah that you have from Rav is incorrect. Now, our Gemara on the previous Amud doesn't have it said over in the name of anyone, but in general, we know that much of what Rav said was conveyed through Rav Yehuda, who is one of his big Talmidim. Even after Rav passes away, Shmuel is asking Rav Yehuda, what did Rav say about these items? So we know Rav Yehuda Alastam is one of the conveyors of Rav's words. And so over here, where Rami Bar Yecheskel, who is Rav Yehuda's younger brother, says that, I think the Mesorah that you have from Rav Yehuda in the name of Rav is incorrect. So lo tetzitu le'lehanu klali dekal Yehuda achi. Don't listen to what Rav Yehuda, my older brother, says in the name of Rav, because this is what Rav said. And what basically Rami Bar Yecheskel is indicating is that he is now bifurcating the din and saying that which you concluded before, that there's a correlation between the makom shechita and the reason for the soul over there, is just not true. Rav believes that the Torbetz HaVeshet is not good for shechita, and yet he still believes that a mashu who is posel. And so in the end, Rava really paskin like Rav across the board, according to Rami Bar Yecheskel, which is that the Torbetz HaVeshet is not a makom shechita, and in addition to that, it is a soul that comes by a mashu. So in that case, when they began the shechita in the Torbetz HaVeshet and then slid down into the Veshet, you started in a location that wasn't a makom shechita, and it's a makom that when you have a mashu, it's going to make it pasul. So you already made the animal pasul before you ever finished the shechita. In that way, Robo was following Rav across the board, not Shmuel at all. And then this statement before in the Gemara that he passed in like Chumrei Rav and Chumrei Shmuel, either that's not a statement of Rava, that's a statement of the Gemara, not of Rava, or even in Rava's view, what he was saying is that part of Shmuel, that it's not a Makom Shechita, I believe Rav holds that as well. So he wasn't saying, I passed in like Shmuel, he was saying Rav also holds of that concept that Shmuel brings, which is that this is not a Makom Shechita. And that's what we ended off with, which was this view in Rav that really brings the two chumrot together and says that the Torbetz HaVeshet is not makom shechita, as well as the fact that the Torbetz HaVeshet is pasul b'mashu. Now the Gemara asks, lamala ad kama. When it comes to the esophagus, what is the highest location where it's still rendered to be an esophagus of veshet that is kosher the shechita? How this relates to the previous question, because we already just dealt with the Torbetz HaVeshet. And that machloka we saw between Rav and Shmuel, whether it's kosher the shechita or not kosher the shechita, should have already addressed this issue. So whether this is just another way of expressing the same information, which is, how do you know how far the Torbetz HaVeshet is? We already had that indication in yesterday's daf, that when you slice it, If it expands, if it is static, then it's the Torbetz Veshet. If it shrinks or shrivels up, then it's considered to be the Veshet itself. So we already have Simanim. But those Simanim are only available to you post-Shchita. When you're doing the Shchita, you want to know where you can check before you have to cut in and find out after the fact. So that may be it's the exact same designation, just this is a way to see it beforehand, that's a way to see it after the fact. Or it might be that this is even asking above the Torbetz Veshet. Above that area of the Torbetz Veshet, what is the area of Makom Shchita? Or maybe this is saying the Torbetz Veshet is problematic even below the Torbetz Veshet. Where's the problem? But at least we're speaking here about the high point of the esophagus. Earlier in the Masechta, we already dealt with the Kaneh. We dealt with the trachea, how high up on the trachea you can go. We had the view of the Chachamim, that you can't even go into the Tabata Gdola. View of Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Yehuda, that you can go even further up into the Tabata Gdola. And then we had Rabbi Chanina ben Antigonos, all the different nuances about how far up in the Kova that you can move in the Tabata Gdola. So now we're doing the same thing with regards to the esophagus, which is what's the high point on the esophagus, which is classified as being okay for Shchita. Gemara answers, Amar Rav Nachman, Ad Kedei Tfisat Yad, until the amount that it takes to grab it with your hand. Now the truth is that we don't know what that means, because Ad Kedei Tfisat Yad can be manifest in many different ways. Rashi over here says that it's Ke Shlosh Etzba'ot Ve'arba. It's three or four Etzba'ot, and that he quotes in the name of his Lushon Maria Zakein, Rav Yaakov ben Yakar, who's the Rashi's Rebbe. He quotes that it's three or four etzba'ot. You can see in Tosafot that he believes that Rashi is being influenced by a Gemara later on that says kedei tfisa. And over there, the Gemara says that kedei tfisa is three etzba'ot. But Tosafot says he's not convinced by that because over there it says kedei tfisa. Over here it says kedei tfisat yad. And therefore maybe there's a difference between them. But Rashi's first interpretation is that it means three or four fingers. Now again, that's not clear as well as to what it means that you're taking three or four fingers. Does three or four fingers mean that you take the three or four of your fingers adjacent to each other, you close them up on the top of your hand, and then if you put them around the esophagus, that gives you the amount or the area that is considered to be problematic at the top? That's one way to view Rashi. Another way to view Rashi is that you take your thumb and you put it down three or four times, and that gives you the area that we are speaking about. Or Rashi then brings another explanation which he does not like. Banishamati achizat chodei tzipornayim. It's a grasp by the, whether it's the tips of the fingers or by the nails of the fingers. He says, Barishon nira ve'enai. He says, I like the first one better. I don't love the second explanation. Now, exactly what that means with chodei tzipornayim, because there's an alternate opinion we're going to see in a second, therefore there are those that want to believe that what Rashi says of here is that you're taking your thumb on one side of the esophagus, all your fingers on the other side, and you're pinching them together. As opposed to before where you're just laying them flat, and you're using the fingers, the width of your fingers by the knuckles, this time you're folding them together and grasping the esophagus with your thumb on one side, and the fingers all together with their tips on the other side, which would be smaller than the other area that Rashi explains. The Balei HaTosafot say, Perish Bakuntris, but then he says, the Tema. The problem that the Balei HaTosafot have with Rashi's explanation is that this cannot be a standard for all animals. Because, as the Balei HaTosafot point out, if you put your hand like that up against a bird, you would cover the entire area that's kasher l'shchita. There'd be no area that's kasher l'shchita. So how could it be three or four fingers, especially if you don't put the fingers close together, they don't put them adjacent to each other, you leave space between them, for sure, you've covered the entire neck of the bird. And so he says, I don't understand how that could be the explanation over here. So then he says, Uperish Rabbeinu Yitzchak ben Rabbeinu Meir, that's Rashi's grandson, the Rivam, who is the brother of the Rashbam and the brother of the Rabbeinu Tam, Arba Etzba'ot Bire'imim Gidolim, that's the highest standard. In a big animal, then it's four fingers. From there, Mikan Ve'elech Kochad V'chad L'fi Mashu Gadol. And then on a ratio basis, you'll take that and then measure it for animals that are smaller than Re'emim. So he says that this is the largest size animal, this is the measurement for it. And then on a ratio basis, on a relative basis, you have to figure out what that means for animals that are smaller. So that's in defense of his grandfather Rashi, who says Arbetz Mot. Arbetz Mot is the biggest, it's not a standard for all animals. Ubahag Mifarish. And then Tosfot brings another view from the Bahag Bal Halachot Gedolot, Kedei Tifisat Yad. It's the amount of Tifisat Yad, Kinokit Inish B'Shtei Etz Botav. It's like when a person takes, like, two of his fingers. Now, Shtei Etz Botav, question is, does that mean, again, like Rashi, two fingers next to each other? Or, Shtei Etz Botav could be a pinch, whereas you have a finger on one side and another finger on this side. Or it can mean two fingers on one side and the thumb on the other side and you're grasping it, which is another possible way, which is that you're grasping with two fingers on one side, one thumb on the other side. That's Shtei Etz Botav. And that would be, unlike Rashi, who has all the fingers there when you're grasping it, here you're only putting two fingers in there. It's a smaller area based on the Bahag. And the Balei Tosfot say about the Bahag, Divrehem, Divrei Kabbalah, those are a Mesorah, V'yesh L'smoch Aleihem. And we should be sumeich on that Mesorah that he has. In the Sichat Kulin, he says that the Or Zeruah brings B'Shem Rashi, which we don't obviously have in our Rashi, but he says that he, Shiraz Zaken Echad, that he saw one elderly gentleman, She'akofeif Ozen HaBehema, he used to fold the ear of the animal over, Klapei Simanim, towards the Simanim, V'Shamaya Matkil Lishkot. And that gave him an indication of where to start shechting. So obviously that's not a siman that's given by the Gemara, but it might have been an alternate way to get to the same conclusion, which is that if you pull the ear down towards the neck, if you start below that point, you're going to be in an area that is kasher. So it's not an exact measurement like we are discussing over here, but it's a way to, on a relative basis, find how far down the neck you are and make sure you're below this area. It's interesting that they had this alternate misora. But again, I don't think it is like what we're speaking about here in Rashi and the Rivam and the Bahag, where they're giving what they think the Gemara means over here. That's not telling you what the Gemara means, it's just saying that's an alternate way to get to the same point, or to ensure it's a fill-in for having to measure, or taking a tape measure, or figuring out exactly where you go. If you use this standard, you're going to be okay all the time. That might have been what the Or Zeruah is quoting in the name of Rashi. The Gemara then says, Lamata ad kama. How far down the esophagus can you cut? So now you gave me the upper point on the esophagus where you can cut and what is considered to be pasul. We had all those different views within the Rishonim. Now we want to know down at the bottom, how far down can you go? So Amar Rav Nachman, Amar Rabba Baravua, ad kidei shiyashir. It's until the point where you have hair-like structures inside of the digestive system. They could be villi, or their papilla that are found inside of the rumen of the animal, although villi are found further down in the digestive system. So here it's for this papilla, since the villi are found in the small intestine and the papillae are found in the rumen. They both are small hair-like projectiles that help with the absorption of whatever's in that organ. And the Gemara says, Ini, is that really true? Amar Ravina, Amar Gneva Mishmei Derav, Tefach beveshet samuch nakaris. When you have a tefach at the end of the veshet, which is coming in towards the rumen, zeu karis hapnimi. That is the inner rumen. We had in the Mishnah, and we're going to discuss again in the Gemara, a karis hapnimi, the inner karis, and then there's the karis achitzon, the outer karis. And again, we'll see here what the meaning of that is. But what he is suggesting over here is that the rumen already begins at the tail end of the esophagus. He's saying the last tefach of the esophagus is already classified as being a part of the rumen. The siman that you just gave us was that it has to have these villi inside of it. That only happens in the rumen itself. That doesn't happen in the esophagus at all. So how can you claim here that it's a tefach up on the esophagus is problematic and still tell me that the siman is kedeshi asir, the area that has these hair-like structures on it? Amai tikashachit. Bakaris kashachit. If you use the siman of the hair-like structures, then you're going to end up cutting in something that is considered to be the rumen and not the esophagus, because you're going to be at that bottom tefach of the esophagus, and that's not classified as the esophagus. So the Gemara amends that to read, Ema tefach bakaris samuch laveshet zeu karis hapnimi. That the first tefach of the rumen is classified as the karis hapnimi. The Karis HaPnimi is the part of the rumen that sits really embedded in the ribs, squeezed in by the ribs. That's the Karis HaPnimi. The Karis HaChitzon is the part that comes out past the ribs. And that's actually what we discussed in the Mishnah and the Memra of Shmuel, that the flesh of the underbelly of the cow protects the Karis HaChitzon, protects the outer rumen, because it's extended beyond the ribs that protect those internal or the essential organs. That's what Rashi explains over here. The Hainu Tevach Rishon Shel HaKaris Havi Karis HaPnimi V'Nukuvato B'Mashu. And there the psoa is a din of a mashu. Vishu Nechba B'Makom HaMeitzar. It is stuck in a very narrow spot. Ben Slo'ot HaChazeh. Between the ribs of the chest. Karile Pnimi. That's why it calls it the internal rumen. Koshara Karis. The remainder of the rumen, karoi b'matnita nachitzona. That's on the outer part, v'nidonit b'kriyat rubo. And then you need the majority to be torn. So they have a different qualification or threshold in terms of being a treifa. But not only that, their location determines that. The one that is more essential is the one that's inside of the rib cage. Because it's underneath the ribs or inside the ribs, it's protected because it's more sensitive. And therefore a treifa, even a single puncture, a mashu, would be problematic. The karis achitzona, which is extends beyond the ribs, is only protected by the flesh, is less essential. I mean, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, in his great wisdom, created the protective areas to protect the more sensitive organs. The organ that was less sensitive is, further out, is protected by flesh, but not by the ribs themselves. And the treifa, or what makes it a treifa, but the karis achitzon, is a higher threshold than the karis apnimi. But in that way, it's no longer a stira, because that means that the kadeshi asir means that the villi, which begin in the karis, in the rumen itself, that's already the area that is pasul. That means the esophagus all the way down to the rumen is fine. Because the tefach we're speaking about is not in the esophagus, it's into the rumen itself. The rumen itself, that first tefach, is the karis ha-pnimi. That's how we reconcile between those two items. Then the Gemara says, Ibai Teima, another way to deal with this stira is to say, Ki amarav bitora. When Rav said about the villi, he was speaking in a shore, the masir tfe, because that has a lot of villi, meaning that their villi don't even just stay in the rumen, they extend up the veshet, they stick up the esophagus a little bit, and then we could reconcile and say that the tefach at the end of the esophagus is classified like a kares, because the villi, the yasir goes up there, that's in a Torah, that's in a shore. If it wasn't a shore, you wouldn't have that. And maybe also the tefach wouldn't apply. It's not clear here from the Gemara whether the tefach applies to all animals. Or is it also only about the shore? Because in the shore, the se'ar goes up the esophagus. It doesn't just stay in the rumen. And therefore the bottom of the esophagus is negdar as a classification like the rumen itself. And therefore it's pasul lishchita. Amar Rav Nachman, Amar Shmuel. Torbetz haveshet shinital kulo milechi kasher. If the Torbetz HaVeshet, which is what we've been discussing until now, if it was removed completely from the jaw, the esophagus runs from the rumen up to the jaw, and then it's attached to the lower jaw and affixed there. That's what keeps the siman in place. The Torbetz HaVeshet, which is that bridge between the esophagus and the lechi atachton and the lower jaw, he's saying if it's completely missing, then it's fine. Batana tuna. And our Tana says, and this is the upcoming Mishnah about those things that are ksherim, says, Nita lechi atachton, if the lower jaw is missing, kasher, it's fine. So that would actually be in concert with what we just heard from Shmuel, which is that Shmuel just said that if the Torbetz HaVeshet is not attached to the lechi atachton, then it's fine. The same thing is true, just in the reverse. If you take out the lechi atachton, obviously, the Torbetz HaVeshet isn't connected to the Lechi HaTachton, or the esophagus isn't connected to the Lechi HaTachton. These are complementary statements which are saying that this does not disqualify the animal. So, Matikla Rapapa, Vaika Ikur Simanim. What about the fact here that you have a problem of Ikur Simanim? Now, first of all, according to Rashi, Ikur Simanim makes you into a treifa. So, if you're a treifa, what does it matter that you're saying that the animal is kasher when the Torbetz HaVeshet is gone? You have the problem of Ikur Simanim, which makes it into a treifa. Even according to the Bahag, who says that Ikur Simanim doesn't make it into a treifa, he still thinks that it's pasul halacha l'moshe m'Sinai. And so whether you view it like Rashi or the Bahag, both of them agree that Ikur Simanim is a disqualifying event. And now, the bigger question, what exactly is Ikur Simanim? Rashi before said that Ikur Simanim was Psukat HaGargaret. It was a puncture of the trachea. Whereas the Balei Tosafot brought from the Bahag that it was a detachment of the Simanim and then doing a Shechita after the Simanim were out of place, that they were detached or there was Ikur Simanim in some way. So now here it sounds much more along the lines of the Alachot Gidolot, that the Ikur Simanim that we're speaking about here is a detachment of the Simanim from their location. They were dislocated either because the Lechi HaTachton was taken out or because the Torah Mitzvah Veshet severed or it was torn away from the Lechi HaTachton. Either one of those sounds like a problem of Ikur Simanim. So then the Gemara says, Ula Rav Papa Kasha Matnitin. Why is the problem that Rav Papa is raising here only a problem for Shmuel? It's a problem for Rav Papa himself, or Rav Papa somehow has to reconcile with the Mishnah. We didn't just bring Shmuel's statement. We said Shmuel's statement is in accord with the Mishnah, which says that if you pull out the Lechi HaTachton, you pull out the lower jaw, that you have a problem. So now, the question that Rav Papa is raising is not just a question on Shmuel, it's a question, how do you reconcile this issue of Ikur Simanim with the Mishnah as well? Nita Lechi HaTachton, Kasher. That's fine. If that's fine, you have a problem of Ikur Simanim. That's the equivalent of detaching the Simanim from their location. So the Gemara says, Bishlama Matnitin Rav Papa Lokasha. The Rav Papa was okay reconciling with the Mishnah because there are different ways to be detached. Ha, de'i'akur i'ilkure. It is undermined. It is uprooted. Ha, de'igom igume. Or it was carved away. Mila ve simanim. From above the simanim. So Rashi over here gives an explanation. You should know that there are multiple girsaot in this Gemara, as well as multiple different ways to explain the Gemara. In Sikat Chulin, he has a chart of all the different girsaot and explanations of the Gemara. The Balei Tosafot and the Rif bring different girsaot than Rashi. And then even in the Balei Tosafot, the Achronim discuss what the first girsa is that the Balei Tosafot are speaking about. So there are multiple girsaot. We're going to stick to Rashi's girsa, but just be aware of the fact that there are alternate explanations as well as alternate girsaot in the Gemara. So Rashi over here says the difference between them is Hadi Uke or Ukeure is Ikur Samanim. Kishenakara Veshet Minalechi Umina Basar. It's a case where it's pulled away not only from the jaw, the bone, but the flesh that sits around it. Meaning that where the Kanan Veshet attached to the lower jaw, there is a fleshy area around there that secures it in place. So that means that you can detach it in two different ways. You can detach it by either detaching it from the lechi, but having the basar that surrounds it still in place, which means that the simanim aren't going to go anywhere. They're not going to move. Or you can detach it in a way that removes it entirely, pulls it away, not only from the lechi and toton, but even from that basar, even from that flesh that locks it in place. So Rashi says that ikure is when ikur simanim shenekar veshem and lechi umina basar. It's a case where it's detached from the jaw, as well as being detached from that flesh, or maybe even from its attachment to the trachea, in that it's loosely attached to the trachea all the way down, as well as attached to the lechi haftaton. So if it detaches from the lechi, but it's still attached to the kaneh, which is a much more stable, fixed type of structure, then the esophagus would basically stay in place. So give you the reference to that attachment, or that film that sits between them, or they could refer to the basar, the flesh that's around that area of the neck, which holds it in place. But that means that in the situation where Iyakar Ukre means that literally it's pulled out and pulled out of it, so it's stabilizing in that place. That means that it's going to come away from that area. Then if Igumi Gume, as Rashi says here, Shenigmama Lechim in a Basar. You carved out the jaw from the Basar, but that Basar that's around the Simanim is still in place. And therefore the Simanim remain tied in by the Basar. So the difference here in Ikur Simanim, and it seems to be almost that Rashi is moving towards, or it seems much more akin to what the Bahag said early on with regards to Ikur Simanim, that this Ikur Simanim over here is a reference to Simanim that are pulled out of their natural location. So if they stay stabilized in their natural location because either they're attached to each other, or because there's flesh that holds them in place, then when you take away the Lechi HaTachton, we're fine. And that's what the Mishnah is saying. Where do you have Ikur Simanim? Ikra Simanim is when they're fully detached and they've lost their stabilizing agent, which is either the basar around them or their attachment to each other. They've lost that, and now they can move out of place. Physically, they can shift out of the location in which they're in. That's much more of a serious issue, and that's Ikur Simanim. So that's how Rav Papa reconciles between Ikur Simanim and taking off the Lechi HaTachton, where he doesn't have a stira between them. It's whether the esophagus is going to flop around, or whether the esophagus is still fixed in place. That's what we're speaking about, and that'll be the difference. But once you get that, well, the Shmuel Kasho, how's Shmuel going to deal with that? Shmuel says if the Torbet Zaveshet is gone, then everything is fine. Now, the Torbet Zaveshet is one of those stabilizing agents of the esophagus. You pull that out, the esophagus is not going to be fixed in place. So the Gemara says, lo teima kulo. So now we're amending what Shmuel said, ela ema rubo. That not if the Torbet Zaveshet is gone completely, but rather if the Torbet Zaveshet is torn at the majority. But that means that the minority or a miut of it is still attached, and that's what's stabilizing it in place. And then we'll have more explanation of that, which is, va'ama rabba barchana mashmol, simanim shinil dal dulu biruban trefa. Didn't we have before that simanim that are nidal del? And there we had a machloket as to what simanim nidal dulu was back on Membet, Amud Bet, where the Rabbeinu Chananel says the nidal dulu, according to the Balei Tosafot, is that they split from each other. And if they split away from each other, that they are problematic. Rashi, on the other hand, brought simanim shenil dalulu. He explained as nitlashu bekama mikomot, that they detached in a number of places. Umechoberim kan maat and kan maat. They're still attached. So from Rashi's perspective, it sounds like the attachment to the jaw has been severed in some way. It's attached, but not attached. It's lightly attached to the jaw. On the other hand, for the Rabbeinu Chananel, who says that it's along the whole connection between the esophagus and the trachea, that breaking apart, again, you lose the stabilization of the esophagus. So here it sounds more akin to what Rashi was saying before, that you have it torn away. But they said over there, Nidal Dulu is Pasul. Now you're telling me that when the Torbet Zaveshet is Rubo detached, minority attached, that it's fine. The Gemara says, Amar Rav Shisha Brei Dervidi, Ha Dikfal Ikfule, Hatam Difruk Difroke. It depends how it is detached. As Rashi explains over here, Parek. Parek means to unload, but it means to tear away from. If it's torn away with strength, then what ends up happening is that you have something that has small pieces that are still attached. The majority of it has been detached. There are small locations along the way that are still attached to that area or the Lechi HaTachton. Rashi says that's not a stable situation, because the miut, the minority that is left, is spread out around that area. Since it's spread out around that area, each one of those items is not in of itself secure, and therefore even the totality of them is not going to keep it secured. Over time, that's going to deteriorate, detach, and result in ikur simanim. On the other hand, if it is carved away, it is sliced away, or peeled away, it means that a robe of it came away, but in one location, that miut is all together. It's bunched together. That's a much stronger attachment, and even an attachment that will let the other part heal and grow back together and seal back together. So that's the difference. It depends on how much strength was put into or how delicately you detached the Torbet Zaveshet. If the Torbet Zaveshet was missing Verubo, it's not Kulo anymore, depending how the robe is distributed. Is the robe just in one location, which means that there's a significant miut on one side that's holding it in place? That would be kasher. That's fine. That's what Shmuel is speaking about over here. The simanim shenidal dulu, which we spoke about back on Membet Membet, that's a case where it was detached with strength, and it tore in numerous locations. There's a minority still attached, but the minority is distributed around the circumference and is not actually strong enough to hold it in place, and eventually it will deteriorate or detach and not regenerate or reseal itself over there. And that's the difference in these two memorot of Shmuel, but also helps us to reconcile Shmuel over here as well, which is that Shmuel is not speaking about, first of all, the entire detachment, which is the story of Ikur Simanim, and the difference between Ikur Simanim and Lechi HaTachton is how it was detached. If it was detached in a way that frees the esophagus to float around or move away, that's Ikur Simanim, that's problematic. If it is left in place by some other anchor, whether it's because it's attached to the trachea or because there's flesh around the top of that area, that is considered to be okay. That's the Mishnah that says when you remove the Lechi HaTachton, it's okay. And then Shmuel's statement is not in conflict with that, because Shmuel's talking about not when the Torbetz HaBesh is completely torn away, it's only when Rov of it is torn away. And that's Shmuel the Shitato, that when a robe of the Torbetz HaBesh is cut, it becomes Pasul. Over here, it's not Pasul because of the way that it was detached. If it's detached in a way that's going to sever it completely, that's a problem. Whereas, if it is severed in a way where it will remain attached and affixed, that's okay. And that will reconcile Shmuel also with regards to this issue. First of all, Ikur Simanim, because he's speaking about Rov but not Kulo. And also reconcile the two positions that Shmuel has. One about Nidal Kulo Simanim, and the one about that Torbetz HaBeshet, Shinital Rubo, that is Kasher. So that's the reconciliation over here, that even though it's detached, it's still okay. So now the Gemara says, Upsuka da Gargaret, a puncture of the trachea. Tana. Kama psukata gargaret beruba. This is one that we've been discussing all along, that for the esophagus, even the smallest nekev is posel. By the gargaret, by the trachea, you need the rove of the circumference of the trachea to be cut or missing in order for it to be problematic. How do you measure the rove? The problem is that the tracheal rings are made up of distinct parts to them. There's the cavity inside, and then there's the ring itself around. Do you measure the robe, including the ring, or do you measure the robe only with the cavity that's inside? What's considered to be a robe over here? And that's the Gemara's question. Bekama ruba, what's considered to be a robe? Rav amar robo bia, it means the majority of the width. V'am leila robe chalala. And some say in the name of Rav, it means the majority of the cavity. So you have either the majority of the width, which would be the width of the ring itself, or it would be the robe chalala, which would be the majority of the cavity that's inside of the tracheal ring. Now, that has influence, which is interestingly counterintuitive, because the structure of the tracheal ring is that it's much thicker towards the front, and then around the back it comes and thins out, and then it has a small piece of cartilage that attaches it in the back. So the ring is actually only 3/4 of a circle. And then at the back end, there's a piece of cartilage that attaches it. But the front of the ring, the protective side, that's why it's much thicker there, is much thicker. And that makes it actually skews the majority of the width of the tracheal ring. It actually skews it to the front because of the thickness of the tracheal ring in the front. As opposed to the robe chalala, the cavity, which would be centered on the cavity of the ring. And actually puts the robe of chalala further back than you would have on robe of ya. So you can see here that robe ovi would come out much earlier in the tracheal ring than robe chalalo. And as Rashi notes over here, the width of the ring that we're speaking about here is, if the animal is laying down, when you're cutting, you cut from the top to bottom, that is the ovi of the trachea. That's the width of the trachea. That what runs from the jaw down to the lungs, that's the orech, that's the length of the trachea. So when we're speaking about the robe, we're speaking about the robe of the circumference of the trachea. We're not speaking about the robe of the length of the trachea. Obviously, there was an opinion like that. Rashi comes to dispel that by describing how you normally sheft an animal. The way it's lying, it's the rochav, that's the width of the animal. And it's the orech is that which runs up and down the animal. The Gemara now says, Hayi psuka da gargaret date da kamei derav. This is a good test. We saw two memorot in the name of Rav. Question is, which one is the one that Rav subscribed to? We had one that said it was robe of the width of the circumference of the entire tracheal ring. The other one said it was the robe of the circumference of the cavity, the empty area inside the tracheal rings. So which one is it? So now we have a case law. Somebody brought a psukat gargaret, that's the kamei de Rav, that was brought in front of Rav. Yoti v'kabotikla, the robe of Yah. He was checking it out. But based on the majority of the tracheal ring itself. Amar le Rav Kana Rav Asi l'Rav. So it's Talmidim. Rav Kana Rav Asi said to Rav, Limatanu Rabbeinu b'rov chalala. Didn't you teach us that the measurement here is based on the robe of the cavity? So why are you measuring the robe of the circumference of the entire tracheal ring? To see if it's a trefa, you should be measuring the cavity. Or in essence, that would be l'kula. So then Rav abandons the whole project. And Sadre the Kamei to Rabba Bar Barchano. And he sends it off to Rabba Barchano. Rabba Barchano is someone who quotes Rabbi Yochanan all the time. We just saw him quote Rabbi Yochanan before because he learned in Eretz Yisrael. He learned for many years under the tutelage of Rabbi Yochanan, and he comes back to Bavel, and in Bavel he is one of the main individuals who brings the Mesorah of Eretz Yisrael and Rabbi Yochanan to Bavel. We just saw him quoted yesterday's staff, which is Amar Rabbi Chama, Rabbi Yochanan, Allah Kistam Mishnah. That was one of the Amoraim quoting Rabbi Yochanan, that the Allah is always like a Stam Mishnah. That's the name of Rabbi Bar Chana. So they said that the Rabbi Bar Chana, Badka Barov Chalala, he went in and he checked it based on the majority of the cavity, Va'akshara, and he said it's a kosher animal. The Zavan Mina, and he himself purchased meat from that animal, but Lesar Istare Pshite, with 13 Pashut coins. Now, as Rashi describes over here, Istare Istri is synonymous with what the Mishnah calls a Sela. A Sela in general is equal to 4 Dinare Kesef. But there were two different types of Sela. There's a Sela Tsuri, which is a Stam Sela, is a Sela Tsuri, the Tsurian Sela, which is equal to 4 Dinarim. There was also what's called a Sela Medina. A Sela Medina, which is a much smaller Sela that was used as a common coinage, and that was worth 1/8 of a Sela Tsuri. So it's actually worth half a dinar, not 4 dinar. So when you want to describe a Sela that is not the Tsurian Sela, you say it is a Isteri Pshite, or Poshut. It's the simple Sela, or the Sela that doesn't have that higher standard. And so it means the 13 of the regular Sela Medina, or 13 times half a dinar, or the equivalent of 6.5 dinar. That's how much money he spent on buying the Bisra, the flesh of this animal. So now, V'heichi Ovid Olchi. How did Rabbi Bar Chana do this? Now that question comes from two perspectives. The first perspective is, it seems like Rav was leaning towards being Oseret, and now Rabbi Bar Chana is Matirit. So that's one problem we have with Rabbi Bar Chana. The second issue we have with Rabbi Bar Chana is, if he paskined about the animal, is he allowed to buy from that animal? Is he allowed to be a beneficiary of the psak halacha that he gave and then able to buy afterwards? We're going to see both of those questions are manifest in the Gemara. So the first question, which is, how could he reverse the psak of another chacham? Beichi avid ochi, v'atanya, chacham shitimei, ein chabeiro rashad l'taher. If one chacham declares or paskins that it's tamei, his friend, another chacham, can't paskin that it's tor. Asar, if one chacham says it's asur, ein chabeiro rashad l'taher. His compatriot can't come along and be matir. Now, you can view this for one of two reasons. The reason could be because kavod ha-chacham, that out of kavod for the original chacham, we don't allow you to change the psak, because you have to have deference to his psak, and therefore you can't undermine his standing, or you can't undermine his psak. That might be one way to view it. Or it might be that the way that this is formulated is tamei and asur, which is that if he declares something tamei or asur, he makes it into what's called a chaticha asura. He makes it into something now that becomes a sore. And now you don't have the right then to change the status of the item. The status has already been declared for this item, and you can't come and undermine it. Which the nafkamina between those might be when it's in reverse. If he was mitaher, or if he was matir, and you want to come along and be mitamei or user, if it's a matter of kabod, you might not be able to do that. On the other hand, if it's an issue of hatchidash al isura, that's not a problem. Now, obviously, if it's a serious issue where you think someone's going to sin if they follow that chacham's psak, then we say, ein chachma b'tzvuna neged Hashem. There you have to give the right psak and say the person's wrong. They were matir and it's really a sur. We don't want you eating treif. So it might be that according to both views, you can give that psak. Question, obviously, is about the circumstances that always has influence over whether the reversal or what's the meaning of the reversal. But over here, it was clear that Rav was leaning towards saying it was a sur, and that's why he didn't keep the animal. He sent it off to Rabbi Bar Chana. Now Rabbi Bar Chana is being matir, something that Rav was oser. Gemara says, Shani Hocha, Rav lo asar mesar. Rav never made it a sur, meaning that we never find that Rav paskin about it. Rashi says that he never had enough time. He says, Dahachi ava bai le mivtike berov obhya, velo shabkua talmidim. His talmidim didn't let him do it. And they sent it off to Rabbi Bar Chana. Because his talmidim said, did you teach us that the way to measure it is based on the robe of the cavity? And Rav doesn't respond to them. It seems that Rav changed his mind. I mean, that's why we have two mesorot in the name of Rav. The original mesorah that he taught to his students was Rov Chalala, the majority of the cavity. It seems Rav changed his mind and thought it should be Rov Avyoh. He starts to measure it that way, and his talmidim say, what are you doing? You taught us Rov Chalala. And then they ship it out, and Rav never has time to measure it, to see what it is. And therefore, he's never oser it. That would be one way. The other possibility is Rav knew it was Robo Bia, but he never gave any psak on the animal. He just sent it off to Rabba Bar Chana. Because he never declared a psak, maybe that's why it's not a reversal of psak, because there was no psak halacha. Now, that also could be manifest in two ways. It might be that he did give a psak halacha, but he didn't declare a psak halacha, which means that he believed that it was a sur, but he never made that a public statement. He never made that into the classification of this animal. Or it could be that he never said anything. And that's why he didn't paskin it was a sur. He thought that way, but he didn't do that. And so for that reason, that wasn't an undermining of Rav's psak. Now, the Gemara says, the second question that we noted before, if he gave a psak halacha about this, how is he eating from it? This is quoted from the Yecheskel. We saw this back on Daf Lamed Zayin, that Yecheskel, in saying to Hashem, you're asking me to eat all these disgusting things, this is how I've conducted myself all my life. I haven't eaten things that are ma'us. So these are things that are otherwise mutar to people, but he was noheg isur in them. And we would see in that a value in being noheg isur in these items and following what Yecheskel does. So again, even though they're not inherently asur, they're not asur min adin, but nevertheless, it's a practice that we would look favorably upon. And that pasuk is, v'omer, aha, Hashem Elukim, hinei nafshi lo mituma, v'nevela v'trefa lo achalti minurai v'adata, v'lo babi basar pigul. We spoke about this pasuk before on Daf Lamed Zayin, about the pashtula pasuk, but he's saying, I didn't eat all of these things that were maus, tuma, nevela and trefa, and pigul. Now the problem is, many of these items seem to be inherently problematic. What do you mean that I didn't eat these items? So Gemara darshins on that. Hinei nafshi lo mituma. What does it mean that I didn't defile myself? Shelo yaharti bayom lavod lidei tuma balayla. I didn't have improper thoughts during the day in order to become a baal keri at night, so that I didn't become tamei at night. The Baal Tosafot back on Lamed Zayin say, that seems to be a problem, Ikar din. Everybody's supposed to not be mehayer during the yom and have keri balayla. So the Baal Tosafot quote, the memra, three things a person is never saved from. One of them is yerhurim bayom, that end up with tuma balayla. It's something that people can't manage, or it's something that is impossible. It's three chataim that people do every day. This is one of the chataim. So Yecheskel did it, was able to manage it. He did what most people can't do. He managed his improper thoughts. That's why it was brought in the Gemara over there, because it was about a behemah misukenet. I never ate from an animal where they said, quick, come and shechta, because it's about to die. So he never ate from an animal that was misukenet. Velo ba b'fi basar pigol. And I never ate basar pigol. Shelo achalti b'behemah. Sheho rabba chacham. I never ate from an animal where it required a psak halocha to be matir the basar. There was a safek, and you needed a psak halocha to make it mutar. I just didn't get involved. I didn't eat from such a thing. All right, very good. So back there on Lamed Zayin, we discussed that both of these are issues of machshava. Pigol is a psul machshava, and a psak chacham is the way that he views the situation and the way that he assesses what's happening. So they're both issues of machshava, and that was the correlation that we said was brought about, the connection between pigol and psak of a chacham. Mishum Rabbi Natan amru, shelo achalti b'behema, shelo humur matnoteha. I never ate from an animal that didn't have the matnot kuna of the keba and the lechayim that are given to the kohen from behemat kulin. I never ate from it before they took those out. Again, there we discussed numerous explanations within the Rishonim as to what exactly the issue is, because there are views that it is tevel if you don't take it off, and clearly the Gemara is not viewing it that way, because it was mutar to other people. So the question was, because Yecheskel was a kohen, maybe that had some influence on what he was saying over here, but nevertheless, he said, I didn't eat from it until they were taken off, whether that means they were given to someone else, or even they took them off and he ate them himself. We discussed all the views of Rishonim over there. But, obviously the Gemara is after this issue of psak chacham. Then over here, Rabbi Barchan is giving a psak bet meima. He should have just not eaten the animal, because that's a proper conduct, or that's something we consider to be a chumrah that is valuable to abide by. The Gemara says, Hani mile milta detalya b'svoro. That's when the psak halacha is coming from something where you have to make a discernment about the animal. Rabbi Barchama agamrei samach. He was relying on his own misora. Rabbi Barchana was not giving a psak halacha, which is generally what the word hora'ah means. Hora'ah means it's not a explicit halacha. It's a halacha that needs the discernment of the chacham. A classic good case of that is marot damim. Person is looking at the dam of a stain
and you want to know whether it's dam tamei or dam tahor. So you take it to the chacham and he looks at the color. That is something that requires discernment. Now, there's certain colors that are obvious that they are dam tamei, and there's certain colors of damim that are obvious that they are tahor. Those damim, even a person can determine for themselves, or even someone who's not a bal hora'ah can give instruction about that because you're not paskening. You're just defining something. There is an area in the middle where the colors is a certain amount of uncertainty. There you need hora'ah. There you need someone's shikul adat to determine is it or is not that color that's tamei or tahor. So that is considered to be the hora'ah, or that's considered to be something that is taloi bisvara, which is both something where it requires discernment, or something where you're making a logical extension, or you're making a decision that's not based on a clean misora, which says this is obviously okay, or this is not obviously okay, but you have to make judgment calls. That judgment call, including the logic that's associated, that's where we don't allow you to eat from the Bema, because you can understand. That's one person's judgment, one person's view, you can understand it. Maybe somebody would view it differently, or understand it differently. So the animal is really bisafek, even though you can abide by that psak of that chokham, it wouldn't be a bad idea to avoid it. It's not nikar adin, but something like, someone like Rabbi Bar Chana clearly should have avoided it. But over here, Rabbi Bar Chana had no uncertainty. He knew the way to measure the trachea was rov chalala. That was the mesorah that he had. And so when he measured it, he went, measured it, it was fine, and he says it's kasher. It wasn't a question about shikul adat. It was a fixed mesorah that he had over here. Now, whether that is an answer to both of the questions we had before, only one of the questions we had before has significant influence over the halacha over here. Do you believe that the reason that he could eat from the animal was because of the fact that he had a misora? But the reason that he could paskin against Rav was because Rav never gave up stock. Maybe the Gemara over here is suggesting, if you have a misora, that you can even give up stock against another chacham. Where do we say that you can't disagree with another chacham? Or you can't reverse his position, that's when it's a psak based on svora, or shikul adat, or hora'ah. Over there, you're undermining the position of the other chacham, or you're trying to change something for chatichai asura, because you, in your own way, are trying to say, I see this differently than the way that you see it. That's something that we wouldn't allow. But maybe if you had a clear misora about this issue, maybe you could say to the other chacham, I think that the misora that you have is incorrect, or my misora is this way, and therefore I'm not disagreeing with you. You, according to your misora, think this way. I have this misora, and therefore it's okay. So the Bali and Tosafot over here open up the possibility that the fact that it's a misora is enough not only to allow you to eat from the animal, but enough to allow you to go against the psak of another chacham. And that this answer of the Gemara is an answer that covers both of the questions that we had before. And that is, has significant halakhic ramifications as to when one chacham can undermine the psak of another chacham. But now, the Gemara is going to ask a more significant question, which is, isn't there suspicion here that you are using your psak to your favor? Titanio, we have a braita. Danet adin, if a person concludes any litigation, zika vichiev, he exonerated one person, he made someone culpable. Timei vitier, he made something tamei, made something tor. Asar veitir, v'chene edim, sheidu kulan, or edim that testified in a situation, rishaim likach. You can purchase it. You can buy it. Over there, they're speaking about, for instance, a land thing, and then you award the land to one of the two litigants. You can go then purchase the land from the litigant that won the case. So even though that's mutar min adin, aval amru chachamim, kachek min hakiur, u min adomilo. You should stay away from things that look a little suspicious, things that look something disgusting, something that is ugly, something that doesn't look or pass the smell test. It looks suspicious, or anything like it, it undermines what you're doing. So over here too, it looks like he's giving a psak halacha on the basar, and then what they're going to do is they're going to sell him the basar cheap. And so basically they're going to pay him for the psak by selling him the basar at a cheaper price. So the chashad is that if we allow you to buy the basar that you gave a psak about, that you have somehow have a personal interest in giving that psak because you're going to end up being awarded some of that meat at a cheaper price because you gave the psak halacha. So Gemara says, Hane mile mide de mizabin bishuma. That's only true when you're speaking about something that's purchased based on assessment, where there's no exact way to measure what the sale price is. For instance, land. You're buying land, people can have different views about what the price is. And that means that there's a possibility that it was sold to you, then people might think it was sold to you at a discount because they wanted to pay you for the judgment, or they wanted to pay you for going in their favor. So that's where there's chashad. Hacha matkala mukach. Over here, meat is sold by weight, exact weight. And so Rava paid what everybody else was paying over there. They measured out the weight. He paid the price. It's not something that is up in the air in terms of what the pricing is. Yeah, the Rabba, or the Gersa possibly here is the Rabba, and has to do with the Machloket from the Gemara and other places in Shas, as to whether Rabba or Rava was the Kohen, and then that influences what was going on there with the Baye, who was a Kohen as well, that were from Beit Eli, that they died early, if the Gersa is Rabba or Rava. But let's say, in all likelihood, the Gersa should be Rava. Shara Trefta, he was Mater Trefa, Vizavan Mina, and then he purchased from it meat. Amra Le Bat Rav Chiska, the daughter of Rav Chiska, who is the wife of Rava, Abba Shari Bukhra. My father, the wife comes along and says, my dad, when he was Matir Bechorot, you need an expert Talmud Chacham to be Matir Bechor for a Kohen. A Kohen Bezman Hazeh can't eat a Bechor because the Bechor Tam needs to go on the Mizbeah. The only way you can eat a Bechor is if it gets a Mum in it. You need a Bucky in Mumim to Paskin. We'll get to this in the Gemara in Bechorot to Paskin about that. So her father, Rav Chiska, was a Bucky in Bechorot, and he would Paskin for the Kohen if he Matir the Bechor for the Kohen if he had a Mum in it. But if he was Matir, he didn't purchase the meat from the Bechor. Rav Chiska, as Rashi notes over here, was a Kohen. And despite the fact that he was a Kohen, he didn't buy from the meat. Now that's based on a view, which we don't Paskin like, that when it comes to a Bechor, only Kohanim can eat a Bechor, Baal Mum. We Paskin that even Yisrael can eat from it, but based on that fact, Rav Chiska was a Kohen and gave Sak, he should have been able to eat from it. Separately from that, even though it was Mutar to Yisrael, many Kohanim were noeg not to give it to Yisrael and only to eat amongst Kohanim. So that additional factor that Rav Chiska was a Kohen is meaningful in the fact that he didn't take from the Basar Bechor where he was permitted to do such. He still didn't take it in that case. So she's saying to her husband, my father was a big tzaddik. What are you doing over here buying the meat after you give a psak aloha about it? He passed it about before he didn't touch it. You're passing about a trafe and all of a sudden you're buying it. So Amar La, brother sponsor, Hani Miloi Bukhra Da Shuma Mizdabein. A Bechor is different because a Bechor, after it gets a mum in it, still has residual kedusha in it. And you're not allowed to sell it in the normal marketplaces like meat. You're not allowed to sell it on a scale. You have to sell it just as is or on an estimated basis. That's because the benefit of the value accrues to the Kohen and not to Kodesh. If it accrues to Kodesh, then Psulai Mekdashim, we let you do anything to raise more money for Kodesh. But over here, where the beneficiary is the Kohen himself, we're not going to let you be Mevazeh, the Psulai Mekdashim, which is this Bechor, in order for you to gain from it. Therefore, we make you sell it in a haphazard manner, but you can't measure it. So over there, Rav Chiska didn't take the meat, because that's really ripe for abuse or for people to be suspicious of how it was sold to you based on the estimation. Hacha, in the case of the trefa, that's a regular way that you sell meat. Matkola mukach. You look at the scale, the price is per pound, per kilo, and you know exactly what I paid, what everybody else paid based on the scale. My. So now, what do you think? Ika mishum umtsam al yota. Well, maybe you think they're going to give me the best piece of meat. So that's the favoritism they show towards me, which is that if I paskin in favor of them, they're going to give me the best piece of meat. He says that has nothing to do with the psak halacha. If I walk into the butcher store, the butcher's going to give me the best piece of meat out of kavod for me. I mean, it has nothing to do with me paskining in this case. Even if I did paskin in the case, if I went into the butcher store and asked to buy meat, because of their kavod for the rav, by the way, it shows you how much kavod a rav they had, the butchers always give the best meat to the rav. And so he says that's not any favoritism or suspicious behavior or collusion that's going on over here, and therefore it's not a problem of marat ayin or making it look like I'm paskin aloha and getting paid by getting the best piece of meat. Amar Rav Chiska, Eishu Talmud Chacham. Who is classified as a Talmud Chacham? As Tosafot notes, to get the consideration that you are machzira v'edato b'tviyat ayin. He doesn't have to give you simanim. He just says that it's his. We believe him. Who gets that status as a Talmud Chacham, or what renders a Talmud Chacham of that stature, is the following. Zero treifa le'atzmo. That's someone who sees a treifa for himself. Rashi says, roe treifa le'atzmo. That's someone who, when he has a safek about an animal, shenolad safek treifot b'vehemto, v'niru otam le'isur b'tam le'heter, and he's vacillating. He doesn't know if it's a sur of mutar, ve'enu chas alei. And he doesn't have any hesitation about losing the money, va'otsra, and therefore he paskins l'chumra. So that's the Talmud Chacham, who's willing, despite the loss that it would cause him, to say, look, I don't know, it's asur heter, and I'm going to paskin the isur, because I know that's the right way to go in this situation. So that's a Talmud Chacham. There are others, like we look in the Rabbeinu Gershom, which says here, zero to refer on smo, ve'ein mare la'acherim la'akel. It doesn't show it to someone else in order to get a kula. I mean, he thinks it's a sur, and then he doesn't try to find a kula, or he doesn't try to take it to someone else to get a kula. Or you could even express it, and others do, which is that this is someone who doesn't require other people to see the treifa. He's able to look at his own treifa, and he doesn't need help. He's such an expert in treifa that he can do it on his own. So there the atzmo is not about that he sees the treifa himself, but he looks, he's able to paskin for his own animals because he's such an expert, he doesn't need any other intervention. Who is a fulfiller of the pasuk of someone who aids gifts will live a long life? Gives the same explanation. This is someone who sees a treifa for himself. Rashi, based on his interpretation, says, if of his own money, he's willing to give up his own money to paskin that it's a treifa and it's a sur, and it's not chas on his own money, then certainly he's not going to take other people's money. And so therefore he'll be a soneh matanot yichyeh, because if he's not makpid in his own money, he's certainly not going to be makpid to take other people's money. Others suggest that zeh rech refer that small means that this isn't someone who's dependent on others. And since he's not dependent on others, he's not going to take gifts from others because he's not dependent on them. He's an independent posek. He doesn't need others. He doesn't rely on others. And therefore he has a problem of taking gifts from others. Darash mazutra mishmeder of chista, kol misha koreh, learns mikra tanach. Vishoneh learns Mishnayot, Veroya Treifa Le'atzmo, and is able to see a treifa for himself, all the interpretations we gave before. Vishimesh Tamidei Chachamim, and then he services Tamidei Chachamim, that's Gemara, as Rashi says over here. He has learned how to take Stirot between Mishnayot and Braitot and reconcile them. He has a framework in which he understands how to work through issues and have Svarah and have a Misora. Shimesh Tamidei Chachamim, Alava Katub Omer. And here the pasuk says, "Gia kapecha ki tochel ashrecha v'tov lach." You will eat from the labor of your hands, from the toiling of your hands, meaning that this is a person, as Rashi says over here, "Kevin dal shalo enu chumed koshken enu chumed mishal acherim negnov nizol." You will eat from the labor of your hands because of the fact that you don't care about your own money, because you're willing to see a treifa le'atzmo, like Rashi says over here, that you're willing to paskin the chumra even though you're going to lose money. And therefore you're going to eat from your own handiwork because you're not going to take from anyone else. You're not going to steal from anyone else. You're willing to lose money. You're also not going to take from other people or steal from other people. Ashrecha b'tov lach. You are praiseworthy, blessed, and it'll be good for you. Zvid amar zuchem nochel shnei olamot. You actually will gain two worlds from this. Olam hazeh v'olam haba. Ashrecha. Ashrecha means b'olam hazeh. B'tov lach v'olam haba. That's someone who is when you eat from your own handiwork, meaning that you don't take from other people, and you're also, when you paskin about your own things, you do it in an honest way. You have the erudition, the servicing of the Talmidei Chachamim. So you're a person who has the proper misora and the proper kilim, tools, to do what you need to do in terms of psak halacha, and you're not afraid to give the psak halacha even when it causes you monetary loss. So that's a person who can put up on a pedestal. Blazar, when they used to send him gifts from the house of the Nasi, he would not accept it. And when they used to invite him to join them to eat there, lo azil, he would not go. Amar lo kabay mar deichi, don't you want me to live? The one who hates gifts will live. You're trying to gift me things, and then you're trying to invite me over, you're trying to make me take from you all the time. I don't want to take the gifts because I want to live a long life. So and therefore you're saying, he was almost implying that you're gifting me and that's going to shorten my life. Don't you care about me? If you really cared about me, you wouldn't be gifting me. You wouldn't be inviting me. That was a way to make it so it wasn't offensive when he rejected the gifts and when he didn't accept the invitations. Rabbi Zeira, and they sent him gifts. He did not accept it. If they invited him to go over and to eat by them, he used to go. Amar it yakurehu itkarubi. It's not that I am benefiting from them, they're actually benefiting from me. Which is that when I go there, I give them kavod. It's like today when they invite a godol to come to the Brit Milah or the Khatuna, when he comes to celebrate with them, It's not that you're doing something for him by inviting him. When he shows up, he gives kavod to the chatan, to the kala, to the whole iruah, the whole celebration is enhanced by him coming there. And it's just the opposite. You want to pay him for coming because you're so excited that he joined you and it gives you kavod. And that's how Rabbi Zeira posited when he joined people, it wasn't to his benefit, it was actually to their benefit. And we have a gemara like that in the Kedushin, which is that sometimes an individual can receive a gift and be giving compensation or really paying the other individual. It says over there that the man has to give the money to the woman or value to the woman in order to generate the Kiddushin. Over there, the Gemara has a case where if the woman gifted a person of stature and he accepts the gift, through that value, he can marry her. That is because the acceptance of the gift by someone of stature actually makes you feel good and actually gives you value. It's not about the gift. It's about the fact that he accepted your gift. Like if you gave some sort of artwork or something that you gave to whether it's the president, the prime minister, you would feel if they accepted it and they put up on their wall or they did something with it, that would be something that would give you kavod and you would feel good about it. And so you could actually generate value in a case where you're actually giving something. And it's the same thing over here. You're inviting him and giving to him, but you are the one who actually is getting the value or the benefit because of the kavod that is afforded by this individual attending your ceremony or attending the meal that you invited him to. Okay, we're going to stop here on the top line of Mem Hei Amud Aleph.